Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It's getting harder and harder for the West to align their words with reality. Its client state, Ukraine, is in big trouble, and things are only expected to get worse. The West is struggling to put an end to a conflict that never should have been fought in the first place. Crosstalking the war of words, I'm joined by my guest, Angelo Giuliano in Hong Kong. He's a political and financial analyst. In London, we have David Curtin. He is the leader of the Heritage Party. And in Athens, we cross to Dimitri Laskaras. He is a lawyer and a freelance journalist. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to David. David's first appearance on the program, much appreciated. David, you know, the more I think about this conflict 1 year plus, it's really kind of a psych-op operation. It's all about perceptions and narratives and a whole lot of propaganda. There's very little talk about the origins of the conflict, the nature of the regime in Kyiv, where all that money is going to, and just why is the West so concerned about Ukraine's borders when the EU itself is not concerned with its borders, and everyone knows the United States is not interested in its own southern border. There's a lot of taboo questions out there, but if we started challenging the narrative, I think we would have very different conclusions in how to proceed, since we have this talk in the background of, you know, a peace talk with the French and the Germans and the Brits are supporting. The Chinese have come out with a plan. All of these things are in mixed right now, but if you go back to the context of how this conflict, then I think that is the way forward to end it. David in London, go right ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I mean, what you've got in the West is huge propaganda. There is only one line coming from most of the mainstream media and all of the governments in the collective West, and that is that Russia is bad, Ukraine is good, Zelensky is an angel, Putin is the devil, and that is how it has been spun. There's absolutely no talk allowed of how this goes back to 2014 and the coup that was instigated by the CIA with Victoria Nuland in Ukraine, because the collective West, or not the people, but the governments and the deep state of the collective West, wanted to bring Ukraine into the EU and into NATO. And that doesn't make any sense from a security point of view or an economic point of view. But there's no talk. That kind of discussion isn't allowed. I did actually get on to a mainstream channel just recently and said that, but I haven't been invited back on. So I think there are powers that be that try to stop this line from being even spoken and this information from being received by the people. But the great thing is that people still look on social media. Ordinary people are actually looking at what's going on and are thinking about this from a holistic point of view and looking at all the different angles and are actually waking up to the fact that it isn't how it is being portrayed by the governments and the media that are in the pockets of the government. And so there is hope that the people just don't want this to go on, because what we're seeing, and, you know, my main concern is that there's hundreds of thousands of people who have now been killed, whether it's Russians or Ukrainians. And it's just slaughter going on. Yep. And we want that to stop. And so that is the main concern of just ordinary, decent people in the West.
But that's not the concern of the people that wanted this conflict. You know, they're willing this thing to go on to the last Ukrainian. Dimitri, you know, I've been to Ukraine many, many times before the conflict, obviously. Wonderful people, wonderful country. But the way it's portrayed in the West, it's some kind of cosmic existing on some kind of cosmic plane, okay? Geography doesn't have much to do with it. Geopolitics doesn't have much to do with it. Kind of echoing what David said earlier, this is just a cosmic fight against good versus evil. But that has nothing to do with geopolitics. Go ahead, Dimitri.
It's astonishing, Peter, how little we talk about the big picture in the West when we talk about this war. And you cannot really understand what is happening in Ukraine and where all of this is heading and what's motivating Western governments without looking at the geopolitical picture. The geopolitical picture is that after the fall of the Soviet Union in the late 80s, early 90s, the United States found itself in the position for the first time in its history of being the sole superpower, a geopolitical behemoth that was at that particular point in time and for a brief period incapable of being challenged in any meaningful way by any other country. Russia went through a period of humiliation, abuse, kleptocracy, with the full and enthusiastic support of the United States government and other Western governments. Leading luminaries in the United States, like George Kennan, warned that abusing Russia's vulnerability at that point in time would ultimately lead to disaster. But the neocons, people like Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Cheney, they took control of U.S. foreign policy and decided that they were going to destroy and crush any potential resistance to U.S. hegemony. And what they now confront is a multipolar world. For the first time in some 30 years, Russia and China, particularly when they're acting in concert and in alliance as they are, pose an insurmountable obstacle to Western hegemony. And the neocons simply can't accept that. They refuse to accept that reality. And by refusing to do that, they are effectively imperiling the future of all humanity.
Yeah, Angela, let's go to you in Hong Kong. To maintain Western, specifically American hegemony, the first thing they had to do was destroy Europe. That's really, you know, the different outcomes of this policy is really astounding, not to speak of the destruction of Ukraine. We have no idea what Ukraine is going to look like at the end of this conflict. But the closest allies to the United States in this conflict are suffering the brunt of it as well. I'm thinking about blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, the economic woes in Europe here, all because of the importance of Ukraine's borders. I cannot understand how this is an existential threat, but they've made it an existential threat by positing it as a good versus evil struggle. Go ahead in Hong Kong.
I think it's important to look at Europe, the foundation of Europe. We need to go back to after World War II. There are two people that are very important in the foundation of Europe, Walter Hallstein and Jean Monnet. They are considered to be the father of for the foundation of Europe. And you know what? They were actually on the payroll of the CIA. So Europe was actually a project initiated by the US. What is behind this is actually better control Europe, and actually long-term plan is to destroy nation states. So What we saw right in this confrontation between NATO, Europe, and Russia, it highlighted that actually these European states, they've lost their democracy. Everything is decided in Brussels, and then Washington has the last say. So what is the most shocking, and it's completely obvious. We knew that Merkel was actually spied by the NSA. We knew already many things, but this makes it much more obvious. So now, if tomorrow Europe wants to sit again at the table, especially after having lied, Hollande lied, yes, Merkel lied, are they credible?
Of course not credible. Let me go to David here. David in London. I'm really glad that Angelo brought that all up here, because the French, the British, and the Germans, it's rumored, there are leaks, you know, they have a peace proposal coming out. Well, from what I have seen, I don't know why Russia would sit down at the table with any of these countries. After, as Angelo pointed out, and when we go back to the Minsk Accords, Russia was lied to. I mean, this is all public knowledge right now. Not a conspiracy theory. It's all public. David.
Yeah, absolutely. There would be no reason to actually take any of the people in the UK, French and German government seriously, because from the very beginning of this, the special military operation a year ago, all they've done is talk about escalating and more war and more weapons and more money to the Zelensky regime. And their rumoured peace deal, if you like, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They're saying, well, we're going to lean on Zelensky to have peace talks, but at the same time, they're going to continue giving more money and more weapons so he can win the war. And this is the language that they're using now. They are calling it a war, and they are saying that there can be no other outcome apart from a Ukrainian victory, whatever that means. And to most of them, that means that pushing the Russian army right back to the borders of Ukraine, taking over the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics and Crimea as well. I mean, that simply isn't going to happen. But you find out the more that they're sending weapons, they're escalating with artillery and then with now tanks. They're talking about aircraft, and then they're talking about long-range missiles and weapons. Every time they do that, it doesn't work, and it isn't having the effect that they want it to. So they just continue doubling down and doubling down. And then the background of all those things that they said they're actually then saying, oh, we want a peace agreement as well. The two things just don't go together, and they are just completely untrustworthy in what they're saying.
Well, exactly. Dmitry, you know, they keep the name of the game is to escalate, get as much land, and then call it a ceasefire. But from the Russian point of view, why would they agree to a ceasefire so the rump state of Ukraine can be rearmed by NATO and do it all over again in 5 years' time? I can guarantee you, you can take this to the bank. The Russians will never agree to something like that. Dmitry.
It would be absolute insanity for them to do that. The Russian people and the state have made sacrifices for the protection of the Russian people, quite considerable sacrifices. We don't know how many casualties have been sustained. They're undoubtedly significant. They find themselves now in an advantageous position. You can go to the website of the Institute for the Study of War, which is a pro-US, pro-neocon website funded by arms manufacturers, and look at a time-lapse map of what has happened on the battlefield since November when Russian forces withdrew from Kherson City. What has happened is there has been one gain after another by Russian forces. They've taken Andriivka, they've taken Berkivka, they've taken Klishivka, Krasnohora, Soledar. They are on the verge of encircling Bakhmut, where the deadliest and most decisive battles have happened during the course of this war. And once that happens, they may well then have a pretty much unimpeded path to Slavyansk and Kramatorsk. So if you're looking at it from the Russian perspective, you've made your sacrifices, you've built up your defenses, you've mobilized hundreds of thousands of soldiers, you're winning the war decisively on the battlefield. It would be utter insanity for you to enter into a peace deal, which, first of all, requires you to cede territory that you've gained with Russian blood, and secondly, leaves the opponent, the enemy, in a position to attack you in the future. This is simply not real.
Hold that thought, gentlemen. We're going to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the war of words. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing war of words. Okay, let's go back to Angelo in Hong Kong. You know, as Western media and the Western elites scurry around to try to come together, cobble together some kind of a negotiation stance to end this conflict, I would just turn everyone's attention to publicly known documents that were sent out by Moscow to Washington and to Brussels on December 17th, 2001. And this is what Russia, it was, you know, their ultimatum, what, you know, negotiating, you can call it whatever you want, okay? They telegraphed to the world what they wanted. And if they didn't get that, there was going to be a conflict. And you know what, everyone? The conflict happened. So let's go back to those two documents. You know, Ukraine being neutral, no NATO infrastructure there, and settling the issue with Donbass and Crimea. That's where, you know, that's a starting point right now. It's everybody knows it. But in the West, they won't recognize it. You know why? Because they don't believe Russia has legitimate security concerns. That's the big problem in ending this conflict. That's because that's how it started. Angelo in Hong Kong.
It's very sad. When you look at what Russia was asking, it was extremely trivial. It was extremely fair. You had in Donbas people that were actually threatened of cultural genocide. All the signs, I mean, very negative signs were all there. What Russia was asking seems so trivial. When you look at the position now that Ukraine is put into, Ukraine might actually cease to exist as a nation state.
Yes.
And it was such a big gamble. But we need to ask ourselves the question. You know, it's so interesting that the collective West is over and over say, talking about the sovereignty of Ukraine. Where was the sovereignty on Ukraine in 2014? Because Ukraine is no more sovereign since 2014. They have, you know, there's so much hypocrisy. Ukraine's democracy has been hijacked since 2014. They did the rule of the game so, you know, they could actually pick up whoever they wanted. And then, you have the CIA. I mean, right now, the CIA is actually calling the shots in Kiev. So there's so much hypocrisy. So it's just an embarrassment. I'm myself European. I'm so embarrassed of the position of my government when it comes to what is happening in Ukraine. And the latest polls, actually, in Italy, it says clearly that Italians don't want this. Yeah. They are not part of it. And they start to understand.
And Angelo, all across the Western world, this is an elite project. It's not grassroots, okay? I mean, where are the demonstrations for Ukraine all over the world? No. You know, it's an elite project. It's a media project, okay? David, if I can go back to you, the irony of ironies, my friend, is that the first few weeks of the conflict, the negotiations in Istanbul with the Turks, you know, Zelensky could have gotten something, giving up what he didn't even have. He didn't have the Donbass, and he didn't have Crimea. He could have easily given that up because he didn't have it in the first place. But no, it was the West that intervened and said, no, Zelensky, you and your gang soldier on until the last Ukrainian, okay? That's why this responsibility is on the shoulders of the West. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, and to the shame of my country, the United Kingdom, I think Boris Johnson, who was the prime minister at the time, had a lot to do with persuading Zelensky not to go with the peace deal that was being hammered out in Turkey between Putin and Zelensky, which would have brought this to a close. And as you said in the beginning, there was absolutely no reason for this war and this conflict to even start. There was no reason for it to continue. Back in April, they nearly reached a peace agreement where they would have agreed, you know, that Crimea would stay Russian, that the Donbass area would stay Russian, which is full of ethnic Russians anyway. And there's absolutely no strategic or geopolitical advantage for the collective West to insist that a Russian area with a majority of Russian-speaking people and ethnic Russians stays in Ukraine and doesn't become autonomous. There's absolutely no reason for that whatsoever. It's not going to hurt the West at all, economically or politically. But I think there's more to it than that, because over the last 8 years, Western elites have turned Ukraine into a hellhole of corruption. We know about the bio labs that are there. We know about the dodgy contracts which are going on. We know about the money laundering which is going on. You know, Hunter Biden himself, it's known
there
he had a £1 million a year contract with Burisma for a no-show job. That's just one person. How many more people actually are personally benefiting from the corruption which is going on in Ukraine? And that's why I think the elites benefit from keeping it as it is, but the ordinary people are suffering
it's one huge money laundering operation. It's a grift. That's the way I look at it. It's no coincidence the Afghan grift ended, and oh, we got another one on that came online. There's no coincidence about that. You know, Dimitri, you know, thanks to Elon Musk, I'm back on Twitter, so I get a daily attacks thrown at me. That's fine. That's okay. I can take it. But I've posited before, and I get really puzzling reactions. The more the West helps Ukraine since 2014, the smaller it gets. I mean, shouldn't Kyiv, consider the longer this goes on, the smaller their country is going to be? Dimitri in Athens.
Well, you know, Peter, with friends like the West, who needs enemies? You know, we're having a discussion in the West now about escalating this conflict by providing main battle tanks. It's unclear how many they'll ultimately deliver. We're now talking about F-16s. And there's an underlying assumption, which no one ever questions in the mainstream discourse in the West, that if we only give Ukraine more weapons, it will regain territory. But there is an entirely alternative hypothesis scenario, which I think any rational person would see as more likely to play out. And that is, if we continue to sustain this war by providing weaponry to Ukraine, it will lose territory. And it will end up with less territory. Now we have a situation developing in the southwestern part of Ukraine where there's an accumulation of Ukrainian forces next to Transnistria. This is actually giving to the Russian military and the Russian government an incentive to try to extend the land bridge all the way from Kherson region to Transnistria so that they'll be in a position to actually protect the ethnically Russian population of Transnistria. We could see a situation unfold if this war goes on where Ukraine becomes an entirely landlocked state and loses completely its access to the Black Sea. And I frankly think that's a more likely outcome than Ukraine recovering Crimea. So, you know, be careful what you wish for. We are actually causing more harm to the Ukrainian people than good.
Well, Angelo, if you look at you know, go back to 2014, if you look at where the GDP was in Ukraine, it was in the Donbass and Crimea. Its GDP is shrinking. Obviously, the war is very detrimental. And I agree with Dmitry here. It's going to most likely end up as a landlocked state, and it'll become an orphan of the EU. I don't know what they'll call the country, Banderistan, I'm not really sure. But that's on the EU now, okay, because they're the ones that's going to have to pick up the bill. I hate to say that in front of Dmitry in Athens, okay, because I know what the EU can do to countries. Angelo, go ahead.
Well, just think about also reconstruction. Who's going to pay for reconstruction?
Well, who's going to want to pay for it if it's not a solid peace? They keep talking about reconstruction. Reconstructing what? Go ahead, in Hong Kong.
No, they're not going to reconstruct. They're therefore destroying. But remember what they did in Iraq, in Afghanistan. They didn't reconstruct anything. And actually, in Afghanistan, they left and they stole $7 billion of Afghanis' reserve that actually those people are starving. So they don't care for a second. Once they're gone, they will forget about Ukrainian. They will forget that Ukraine ever existed. And keep in mind that we have nurtured this Nazi ideology. Those Nazis are there in Europe, you know, and you know, we is it the next ISIS that we have created that actually is going to hunt us back in Europe? Because this is a nasty culture, and they are going to live with that. Europe is going to live with what they created.
David, you know, this again, when I started the program here, what Western elites won't tell us about what this conflict here, and it going back to the origins of the coup in 2014, who exactly was involved in that? Who used force? All of this is public knowledge if you want to know, but the mainstream media will never tell you these things. David.
No, and the funny thing is the irony is that the mainstream media for the last 8 years until 2022 have been talking about a far right problem, a neo-Nazi problem in Ukraine. They've been open about that, but the moment the special military operation started, they're completely silent on that, and the narrative just flipped instantly. And when that happens, you know there's something wrong. You know that the strings are being pulled and propaganda is being put in place. But yeah, we know that in 2014, the coup was instigated mainly by Victoria Nuland and other people in the CIA and the United States government. And the right sector, the Azov Battalion and other neo-Nazi groups were a key part of what happened in 2014 to get rid of a democratically elected government and put in a place a puppet government, which would then bring Ukraine into NATO and into the EU. And that is the wrong future for the world. I mean, it's better for NATO to actually have Ukraine as a buffer state, as a security zone, so that there is no antagonism.
David, I can tell you, I think part of the end of this conflict is the end of NATO, okay? But I got my fingers crossed, okay? Dmitry, 1 minute left here. One day before the conflict started last year, Ukraine was known mostly for its corruption, but not anymore. Interesting how they did that. Dmitry, 1 minute, go ahead.
Well, I believe it was 2021 when the Pandora Papers revealed that the Churchillian Zelensky himself had stashed significant assets offshore in tax havens. And suddenly all of that was forgotten. It was also forgotten that he was largely funded and sponsored by Ihor Komoloysky, yep, one of the most corrupt oligarchs who's accused by the U.S. government itself of a multi-billion dollar bank fraud. And that same oligarch funded the Azov Battalion. So, you know, the ability of the mainstream discourse in the West to exercise an intentional amnesia is absolutely remarkable. But ultimately, our refusal to look at recent history and give it due regard is going to cause immense suffering, first and foremost, to the people of Ukraine, but also to the collective West.
Yes, and that suffering will last for a very long time. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Hong Kong, Athens, and in London. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.